The Influencer's Edge is brought to you by the Rapid Sales Accelerator. If you're ready to skyrocket your sales by 30% or more in just 90 days, then you need to claim your free training right now. You'll learn 4 words that will compel your prospects to trust you like they were children within the first 3 to 5 minutes of any conversation across any platform and any medium. You'll learn how to give your prospects objection amnesia to crush objections like, I need to talk to my spouse, or I need more time to think it over, or it's too expensive. And finally, you'll get a free recorded audio training that will install unbelievable attitudes for success and wipe out any limiting beliefs. So if you'd like to claim your free training now, go to www.paulrossbook.com. Do it before your competition does it now. Welcome to the Influencer's Edge. This is the place where you come to get the latest breakthroughs, cutting-edge insights, tools, and techniques to leapfrog over the pack in sales, persuasion, and influence. Be sure you visit our website at www.theinfluencersedge.com. And while you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now sit back, tune in, and enjoy today's episode. All right, welcome back to the Influencer's Edge. Now, today, you best pay attention because my guest grew a business to not $1 billion, $2 billion. For those of you who don't know the math, that's 2,000 million, which is more money than I can conceive of, but our guest Ian managed to do it. So Ian, as I told you, I'm going to briefly power through the biography. I don't have my reading glasses, so I've had to put it on my phone screen capture and grow it like that. So our guest today is Ian Altman. Ian grew his prior businesses from zero to over $1 billion in value. He has since built a reputation for helping others deliver similar results. He is perennial, all the time without stopping, recognized as one of the world's top 30 experts on sales, and his Same Side Selling Academy is rated one of the top 5 sales development programs globally. Ian is the co-author of the bestseller Same Side Selling and hosts the 350-episode strong Same Side Selling podcast. We have to talk about that. So first and foremost, congratulations on growing. Oh, you told me off the air a $2 billion business. People are going to want to know, how the hell did you do that?
Paul, first of all, it requires a lack of sanity. We grew the value of the business from $100 million to $2 billion in a little over 3 years. And I always tell my clients now, no one should try and grow that fast anymore. I completely burned out, but the same principles that I learned while doing that are the things that I share with other people now. I was very fortunate to have a great team of people as I was leading that organization, and just we expanded to 12 countries around the world, and it was very much of a whirlwind. And I wouldn't try and grow something that fast again. I've got clients who we've helped grow from 100 million in sales to 700 million over a 5 or 6 year period. I would say that's a pretty good clip, and you don't need to outpace that.
Well, this is very interesting. I had a guest some time ago who said, as you expand, as you scale, things are going to break. And so people don't expect it. They think, yeah, okay, I get there, it's going to be all roses. Did things break as you scaled up like that?
At different levels. Once you get to a certain size, they don't break because you have all the infrastructure. But for example, as people are growing businesses, you know, if someone's growing a business, let's say is $500,000, you know, there's not that much that's really going to break at that smaller level. When you go from like $500,000 to $1.5 million in that range, there are things that break and gaps that you have that you have to fill. And then I find that for businesses at around that $1.5 million to $3 million is kind of like the this vortex of evil where weird things can happen to businesses. So you got to get past that $3 million as quickly as possible. And then it's just at different intervals or different things that you need. Because, for example, a $5 million company generally has a CFO who's running finance and different people in different seats. when you're $1.5 million, it's people wearing multiple hats. And guess what?
Yeah.
Sometimes we're really good at the one thing and the other thing we do because that's the job that we have. Once you get to a certain size, what you have to recognize is the way you grow from 500,000 to 2 million is very different than the way you grow from 2 million to 5 and 5 to 50 and 50 to 150. It's just different types of clients, different types of deals. So business that you really saw it and said, wow, I want to land this type of account when you're $10 million may not be that exciting when you're at $100 million. So it's just, those are the things. I wouldn't say things break, just things change.
Got it. Love the distinction. Let's dive into same side selling. So, excuse me, this is on my phone and I apologize. So let's just ask, what is same side selling? What the hell does that even, what does it mean? And if you're on the same side as the client, and we'll get into how you define it, how do you maintain leadership and I guess the word, I don't want to use the word control, but how do you maintain direction of the conversation?
You can call it control, direction, whatever. Those aren't necessarily bad words. Most books that have been written about sales either follow a game metaphor or a battle metaphor. So in a game, we have a winner and a loser. In a battle metaphor, the loser dies. And then we wonder why it's adversarial in nature. So my co-author is a guy named Jack Quarles. Jack, you probably guess with last name like Quarles. Jack spent 2 decades in purchasing and procurement. And so what we talk about is, what are the adversarial traps that pit buyer and seller against one another? And how do we instead follow what we call, our metaphor is more of a puzzle that says, look, if we're both trying to achieve the same goal, which is, you know, amazing outcomes or results for the client, then we can both lay our puzzle pieces on the table, see if we have a fit, if not, or see if we have a fit, or maybe we don't. If we don't, no big deal. If it looks like we have a fit, then we're pursuing something together. So the notion of control or influence, wherever you want it to be, if you're my prospect and you're convinced that I am more committed to the results for you than I am to the sale, then by definition, you and I have the same goal. And all of a sudden it drops all those barriers. And now you and I are just collaborating to figure out if we have a fit. There was someone who reached out to me yesterday and wanted my help solving something for their business. And I said, look, I'm going to spend at least the first part of the meeting learning about your situation, seeing if I can help. And 15 minutes in, I said, you know what? I've helped other people do this, but I'm probably not the best person to do it. Let me refer you to someone else. And he spent the next 15 minutes trying to convince me, no, you're the best person for me. I'm like, actually, I'm not. This isn't some clever tactic. I just think someone else can probably help you better than I can. And that's easy to do. I get it when you come from a place of abundance, where you can say, now I'm not the perfect fit, I'm going to walk away. But my clients who embrace that are the ones who I'll say, so we're going to walk away from stuff that's not ideal. And they're like, oh, but you know, right now we're doing $5 million and I don't want to walk away from those accounts. I'm like, I know, but here's why we're going to do it. And then you fast forward 3 years and they're at 50 million and they think, oh wow, it was a really good idea to walk away from those accounts where I wasn't the best fit. And that's what we're getting at with same side selling. We want to be metaphorically on the same side of the table, putting that puzzle together, not adversarially trying to convince someone to do something that we want that they don't want.
All right. So let's talk about the technology or you've got, first of all, I love the mindset and the honesty behind it, which is, can you really help the client? And this requires, I think, and I want to bat this to you, it requires that someone not be in a scarcity mindset. So how do you train people if they're in that mindset? And a lot of people who are even successful still have that scarcity mindset. How do you teach them to change that mindset?
You know what? It's not so much convincing as much as people seeing the results. So classic example, we'll go in and work with an organization where their top salesperson says, well, I'm not going to change the way I do things. I've been successful. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And they maintain that mindset until they're no longer the top salesperson. And the person who was number two or number three, those people are now number one and two. And that other person becomes number one. And the person who was number one says, you know, maybe I should take a look at this thing again. And so the approach I take with my clients is, hey, if you think the way you're doing it is a better approach, test it. Test them side by side. I'm okay if the way you've been doing it works out better for you than the way I'm approaching it. Doesn't matter. I can't be wedded to the fact that I have to be right. The goal is, how do I get the best outcome? And what you start realizing is, if you ask any organization, any business owner, okay, tell me about a client who you absolutely love. They'll talk about this client. So 0 to 10, how good of a fit is that client for you? They'll say, oh, like a 10, amazing client for me. Okay. Now, do you have a client who's like the bane of your existence, where, you know, it's just like, man, I wish I didn't have this client. Yeah. Okay. And do you feel they take up more time or less time than the clients you love? Oh, more time. Okay. 0 to 10, how good of a fit are they for you? Probably like a 5. Okay. So do you want more of those types of clients? Right. It's just, it's helping people realize that if they get it wrong, it actually distracts their time from the people they can help the most. Yeah. So for me, if I'm focused on the clients I can help the most, you know, I love every day, because it's people who get it, who are all in, who use the concepts that we teach and share. And, you know, my favorite is one of my clients who, when they first engaged me about 6 years ago, they were barely making payroll. The principals weren't paying themselves. They said, hey, we want to engage you, but can we pay it over time? All my clients pay up front. I had a soft spot. I'm like, all right, we can do this. And then when they brought me back last year to work with their team, the CEO said, hey, can we send our jet for you? Right. And like, this is someone who, you know, they couldn't pay their bills 6 years ago. And now, like, he said, well, but we wouldn't have the jet otherwise. So can we send our jet for you? I said, you know what? It's really nice. These guys are not that far away. I said, the airlines have 20 nonstop flights a day between our cities. In first class, I'm going to spend $600 maybe. Like, it's going to cost you $12,000 round trip to come get me, you know, to bring me to you and then bring me back. It's just, it's a waste of money. It's not worth doing. But it's like, you know, those are the things where you're like, okay, we're totally aligned. This is someone I can help. And then it makes you feel great that they've gotten the outcome. I think too often people think of the finish line as the sale. The finish line is not the sale. The finish line to the salesperson might be the sale. The finish line to the client is the successful outcome or result. And so if you are committed to that outcome or result and your client knows it, they're willing to pay more for that. And that's the distinction that we have to have.
So that being said, how do you, it's one thing to say, I'm committed to your success, but how do you, I don't think that's sufficient. How do you demonstrate that you're committed to that?
It's a really simple concept. So in the same side selling book, in the physical book, we discuss something on page 76. And I say that because it's the only page reference I know in the entire book, but there's a concept we teach called the same side quadrants. And the idea is, it's a structure for how we take notes during a meeting. And the idea is that we teach this notion of what we call issue, impact, importance, and results, that says we take notes about the issue, namely what inspired you to meet with us today, the impact and relative importance, impact being, so what happens if you don't solve that? How would you quantify that? The importance being, how important is this compared to other things on your plate? And the third of the four quadrants is the results. So what it sounds like is this, is if you were a prospect, I would say, so Paul, just because you spend money with us doesn't mean we're successful. What would you and I measure together 6 months down the road so we can hold each other accountable for that outcome? You'd say, well, I want to see this, 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 and that. Okay. So Paul, even if we did everything we said we would do, what might prevent you from getting those results? Well, if our team didn't have the right training, if we didn't follow through, okay, what are the things you and I can do to ensure that that's not the case and that you actually get those results? So by asking the right questions, that when I ask executives, I say, okay, so those are the types of questions. What percentage of your vendors ask you those questions? More than 10%, less than 10%, less. Okay, more than 5%, less than 5%, less than 5%. More or less than 1%, less. So the reality is, no one's asking those types of questions. But if you start asking those questions, what you have to realize is this. Okay, I've got two different vendors. One vendor says, so Paul, who needs to sign off on this and how do we get this contract done? Vendor B, on the other hand, says, what are we going to measure together? I want to make sure you can hold us accountable.
I love that.
Who would you rather deal with? You'd rather deal with vendor B. Okay.
Of course.
Would you pay more for vendor B?
Absolutely.
How much more? And people say, oh, I don't know. It depends. Okay. So let me phrase it a different way. How much less would you have to pay for it to be a good deal, but you don't get the results that you need? And the answer is it doesn't matter. It's not a good deal if you don't actually get the results. So
correct.
If you have a conversation with your clients or prospects about what does success look like early in the process, then when your client says, I don't know, Paul, I mean, your stuff's kind of expensive, you get to say, okay, well, what we talked about is these are the results you're looking for. And in order to achieve those results, this is the investment that's really required to get there. Do you think we overshot the results? Should we scale that back? And now you're having a discussion about price right. versus results, not price in isolation.
And no one's going to say, yeah, we should scale back the results. No one's
maybe they will. Maybe they will. Oh. And if they do, that's okay. They might say, yeah, you know what? Yeah, maybe we were a little bit aggressive. We don't really need, I mean, if we could just achieve this, that'd be worth it. Okay, let me see if I can scale this back. And the shame is this. If you don't know what your client's going to measure for success, how can you possibly tell them what it's going to cost? You can't.
Really?
But people do it all the time. People do it all the time. They say, oh, well, yeah, it's going to cost this much. And the client goes, oh, yeah, and I also want to be invisible. Is that the same price? Oh, well, you want to be invisible. That's going to cost. But it's like, and then we're modifying what we said, and it sounds like we're bait and switching. Instead of someone says, how much is it going to cost? You go, I don't know. It depends what we're trying to achieve. And it's like when I deliver keynotes at events, when I do workshops for companies, one of the things that I do is say, so what are we going to measure going forward? They say, well, I want to make sure that people are accountable, they implement these concepts, and that they follow through. Okay, then as part of this engagement, we're going to include 60 days of access to our Same Size Selling Academy after this for reinforcement. Your team can ask questions. We'll have live coaching, et cetera, to make sure this stuff sticks. You know, it's like, if I know that's what they're looking for now, who else are they talking to? They're talking to someone who's going to come and just speak on the stage for an hour and leave versus I'm making sure they get results. And of course we have, you know, video testimony after video testimonial, people saying, yeah, we implemented this. And within 30 days, we landed this account that we thought was dead. That's $1 million a year for the next 10 years. Okay. Well, gee, so you paid a little bit more for this versus that. Was it a good deal? Yeah, I think it was a good deal. Okay.
This is really great. What occurs to me also is as you're going through this information gathering process, if you get a lot of I don't knows or I'm not sures, that's telling you they are not a good prospect. That's telling you you're going to have to pull teeth to get these people to get in line, to tell whether you're going to be in alignment with them, whether they're good. So it's not just assisting them. It's assisting you and not wasting your time and not wasting your morale and wasting your focus.
Absolutely. And it may be that they're the right prospect, but this is the wrong person. It may be that that person, you know, that they really have to engage other people. We're asking questions that the people who ultimately are most impacted by whatever they're talking about are going to know and are going to care about. And what we're doing is we're building a business case. Now, the interesting thing is that many people...
Pause. You just used a brilliant term. So okay. I did tell you before we started.
You did. You warned me.
I warned you. So you said building a business case. That almost sounds like Sherlock. The first association I got was Sherlock Holmes investigating a case. You almost go into what I notice that's unique about you. You go into an investigator mode. Have you ever thought of yourself as an investigator?
Absolutely. We use that concept with our clients a lot. The idea is this. Most people, when they're in a sales mode, whether they're an entrepreneur, whether they're someone who's a direct seller, it doesn't matter. They go in with the mindset of, how do I convince the client that they need whatever it is I'm selling? And instead, what they should be doing in discovery is saying, has this individual convinced me as the seller that they have a problem that's worth solving, that we're good at solving? So what happens is, you become skeptical as an investigator. It's almost like Columbo, if you remember the old Columbo show.
Yes, of course.
It's like, you know, it doesn't sound like this is a big enough issue that would be worth pursuing, and let the client convince you, no, this is a really big deal, and here's why. Because as they're convincing you, Paul, who else are they convincing?
Themselves.
They're convincing themselves.
Yes.
Right? So too often salespeople feel like, I'm going to tell the client everything, and effective sales, getting on the same side really comes down to, are you asking the right questions so that your client and prospect is convincing you and themselves that this is something worth solving?
I think there's some finesse involved with this too. So the I do a lot of my work. It doesn't matter what I do, but I got that hit. I saw Sherlock Holmes, an image of Sherlock Holmes. I thought, this guy is teaching investigation as much as he's teaching sales, or he's saying that investigation is as much a part of sales as doing the presentation or the close or the rest of it. Investigation sets it up, so the client essentially closes themselves in the process of qualifying. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. If we're asking the right questions towards the end of the sales process, people are always trying to find out what's a great question to ask for the close, which I think is a ridiculous term. In fact, one of the other people is listed on the top 30 in sales is a guy named Jim Cathcart. Jim's been in the sales industry forever. The man's brilliant. We were at a conference and Jim and I were talking, and Jim said, I think the whole term closing is a bad term.
Me too.
He said, because you're not closing anything, you're opening a relationship.
Me too.
And the best question, if you've done your job right, is, well, you've convinced me this is a pretty serious issue. Would you like our help? Like, that's what it comes down to. It's, would you like our help? Yeah, I really would. Okay, great. Let's get started. Here's the way we do this. And if the client says, I don't know that we're there yet, well, you learn something also. It shouldn't be this adversarial high tension moment, unless you're selling timeshares, I guess. But you know, if you're selling something with integrity, it should really just be a matter of, okay, I understand your problem. We're now both convinced it's worth solving. I've outlined our approach. You've told me that it seems like that's going to solve your problem convincingly. Would you like our help? And it's a very non-threatening, very conversational way to reach that outcome.
So one of the things I like to ask, I always ask guests who have an entirely different way of doing things, I ask what the methodology is and what are the essence, what powers the methodology, but I want to ask about you. How the hell did you come up with this?
I listened quite a bit. So for starters, I had the benefit of writing a book together with a guy on the procurement side. And there were several times where I would say, well, Jack, this is what's going through the procurement guy's head. And Jack says, no, it isn't. We're never thinking that. Okay, so we have these preconceived notions. I also did research with over 10,000 executives around the world on how people make and approve decisions. So everything in same side selling is built on this model of, here are the questions that executives ask when they're making or approving decisions. So if we ask questions that answer those questions for them, then our projects get approved ahead of other people's projects. Then our stuff gives them more confidence and trust than other people's. And we just have to be dedicated to the fact that maybe someone isn't a fit and we're okay telling them that. And that's the hardest thing that people have is acknowledging when something's not a fit, because they've been trained, never take no for an answer. You keep pushing. And the reality is it just doesn't work that way. I get people often in my speaking business where they come in and say, oh, our CEO says we have to have you, but we don't have that much budget. And I go, oh, that's great news. And they go, oh, why? You'll do it for less? No, because you guys said you have about 80% of the budget. Some people have to find 50%, 70%. You only have to find 20%. Here's how other people find it. If you can find that, great. If you can't, let me recommend somebody else. And I'd say 9 out of 10 times, they come back within a week and say, okay, we're good. Right? But it's just...
It's really good too. I know you don't intend it this way because you're not a manipulation kind of guy or a tactic kind of guy, but it's also, and again, you're not coming from here, but it's also a takeaway in a sense. You're not doing it with that intent. You're being honest about it, but it's similar in the effect of a takeaway.
I jokingly say to people, I'm like, look, I can either discount what I do and then teach your team how to do that, or I can stand firm on my fees and teach your team that. Which would you prefer? All right. And it's, you know, I'm in a unique position in what I do that I can say that, but it's just, it happens to be true. And very often I'll refer them to someone else and say, hey, if this is where you're at, here's someone else does a great job at a different price point.
All right. I still want to dive into how you came up with, so you said you interviewed all these executives. So it was very empirically based. You did research. You didn't just try to intuit it. But somewhere along the line, you still had to have had permission or some kind of orientation in your life where you gave yourself permission to look at things and go, no, that's not the way it works. Where did you find the intellectual courage to do that? Did you model a parent or did you have a mentor? Let's not talk about what you think. We've gone through that and how it works. But I want to know about you. How did you develop the courage or that way of thinking that says, no, this is not how things work. I'm giving myself permission to go investigate. Because a lot of people may have that insight, but they don't do anything with it. Do you understand where I'm driving?
I understand where you're going, Paul. So my academic background is in quantitative economics and decision science. So I'm empirically curious about how things work.
Love that
term.
And so
for me, throughout growing my businesses, I would bring in different consultants and different sales methodologies. And each time I would look and say, I think these elements are integrity based and I like these I don't like, let's get rid of those. And then would bring in something different. I go, I like these, I don't like those. And at a certain point, I kind of stepped back and said, okay, I'm going to take three from this bucket, two from this one, because I think this gets to the heart of the truth. Effective sales is not about persuasion or coercion. I believe effective sales is about getting to the truth as quickly as possible. So to that end, whatever we can do to help people have a simple, not necessarily easy, but a simple approach that says, here are the questions you want to ask. Here's what we do when we're first meeting somebody to pique their interest. Once we pique their interest, here's how we differentiate what we do from other people. Now, if they're still interested in the stuff that makes us special, now I just have to get them to convince us that they have a problem worth solving that needs that. And if that's the case, then it's a very simple step-by-step process. I think that there are a lot of methodologies that I studied over the years that I think on paper are amazing. It's just most human beings can't follow the 87 steps they require. So everything we teach is, here are three steps at this point. Here are four pieces of information we collect. Here are three things to do, because you can follow and execute those things. And if you're building an organization the size that I was running, it's got to be simple or you can't manage it.
This is why I hate things like Napoleon Hill's 37 laws of success, like 37, pardon my language, 37. You better fucking refine your process. If you have to remember 37 things, then you're probably adding stuff that doesn't belong or you're overcomplicating what does. My big takeaway from this interview is your term empirically curious. I think without that mindset of being empirically curious, you would not have been able to create any of what you've created today. The foundation of what you do is your epistemology. For those of you who don't know, epistemology is the part of philosophy that studies how do we know the things that we say that we know. So I love that orientation. I share it, but I've never heard it put that way. Empirical, and you're empirically curious. I think had you not gone into this job, you would have made a great detective or you would have made a great forensic psychologist.
I don't know. Both those things could be true. We'll never know, Paul. We'll never know. But, you know, it's a notion of, I want my clients to be curious also. And it's a matter of, like, I'll say to them, they'll say, I'm looking to hire someone great in sales. What skills or attributes should I look for? I'm like, look for people who are curious. Look for people who are asking questions, not to validate their own beliefs, but are open to the fact that they may be wrong. Like, if I come out of a meeting and everyone says, oh my God, it was an amazing meeting, my first question is, what do you think we should have done differently? And everyone says, well, no, the meeting was great. I'm like, but there's always something that we can learn from it and something that we can do that makes it better. And I always think it's funny if I'm working with an organization and someone says, I've known this for years, there's nothing new I'm going to learn. And I'll say, that's funny, because I teach this every week and I learn something new every time. So obviously you're way smarter than I am. It usually gets them to kind of perk up and go, all right, maybe I will learn something new. And my favorite thing is the people who have been in sales for 20 years think they've seen or heard everything, and they come up the first break and say, okay, this is all totally different. Okay. And I think this could really make a big difference for me. I'm like, cool. Like, and my conclusion is, okay, this person's going to do well because they're curious. Like, they're open to the fact that they could learn something different. Even if they weren't initially, they're going to do well.
This is something I've seen across the board with successful people, is they're insatiably curious. at things that they're already, not just at the world in general, but things that already have achieved a high level of excellence, they're still incredibly curious. I see that in you. I think that's an inherent trait in you. I don't know if you approach all of life that way, but you've certainly done it with your business. And on that note, we have to wrap this up. I wish I could have you on for more. I hope you've enjoyed it. I know people are going to want to stay in the conversation with you. So how do they do that?
The best place to go is samesideselling.com. Everything we do in the world of same side selling is there on, you know, on all the social media platforms. It's just Ian Altman. So on Twitter, X, whatever we call it these days, it's Ian Altman. And especially if someone heard me on this podcast, just if you send me a note on LinkedIn, say, hey, I heard you speak with Paul the other day. That'd be great. Then it's like, I know where it came from. I might get just a little bit of spam otherwise. So if I know where it came from, that'd be
You'll get spammed. That's, we can't help it. That's the technology we live in. Stan, I'd love to chat with you for a little bit after the recording is over. Our guest has been Ian Altman, Same Side Selling. We'll see you on the next episode of The Influencer's Edge. Bye now.
The Influencer's Edge is brought to you by the Rapid Sales Accelerator. If you're ready to skyrocket your sales by 30% or more in just 90 days, then you need to claim your free training right now. You'll learn 4 words that will compel your prospects to trust you like they were children within the first 3 to 5 minutes of any conversation across any platform in any medium. You'll learn how to give your prospects objection amnesia to crush objections like, I need to talk to my spouse, or I need more time to think it over, or it's too expensive. And finally, you'll get a free recorded audio training that will install unbelievable attitudes for success and wipe out any limiting beliefs. So if you'd like to claim your free training now, go to www.paulrossbook.com. Do it before your competition does it now. Thank you for tuning in to The Influencer's Edge, where you get the latest breakthroughs, cutting-edge insights, tools, and techniques so you can leapfrog over the pack in sales, influence, and persuasion. Remember to visit our website at www.theinfluencersedge.com to enjoy even more great episodes like this one. We look forward to seeing you again on the Influencer's Edge Show.